This is the Business of College Sports podcast with your host, the founder of businessofcollegesports.com, Christy Dosh. Find her on Twitter and Instagram at sportsbizmiss.
Welcome to the Business of College Sports podcast. I'm your host, Christy Dosh, the Sports Biz Miss, and I am here today with my longtime friend, Darren Heitner. Darren and I both went to UF Law, although I believe I graduated right before he began law school there. But ever since we graduated law school, we have served on numerous panels together at law schools all across the country, talking about legal and business issues in sports, particularly in college sports. And we have been on panels for quite a few years now, talking about name, image, and likeness, and even talking about concepts like pay for play. And so I knew that I was ready to do a little bit of an NIL update. Where are we at with state laws? Where are we at with potential federal legislation? Is the NCAA going to do anything here? And I knew Darren was the guy I wanted to talk to about this. So I will admit that I had some confusion even when we were going through the state laws. There had been a couple of different dates thrown out there for both Tennessee and Maryland's start dates. And I promised that when I recorded this intro, I would make sure I had the correct information, which is that Tennessee's start date is January 1st of 2022, and Maryland's start date is July 1st of 2023. To help avoid further confusion, I am going to link to my state-by-state tracker that is on businessofcollegesports.com. I update it every single time a new state has their governor sign an NIL law into effect, so you can always find the latest information there. I also track other bills that are going through states that have not been passed or signed yet, so I try to break down everything that's going on in all the states in this one tracker, which I will stick down in the show notes. As of the time of me recording this intro, which is May the 21st, we are at five states going into effect on July 1st. Those are Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, and New Mexico. Arizona will go into effect later on in July, July 23rd to be exact. And then the rest of the states that have passed laws, we're now at 16, go into effect over the next few years. If you see Maryland's start date as July 1st, 2021, that is probably because there are health provisions in that bill that do go into effect on July 1st, 2021, but the NIL portion of that bill is July 1st, 2023. Again, I've got all of that broken down in my state-by-state tracker over on Business of College Sports. I'm going to link to that down in the show notes, but just wanted to clear up that confusion before I give you my interview with Darren Heitner. I bet most of you already know who Darren is, but if you don't, Darren is an attorney. He is the founder of Heitner Legal, a law firm that has a number of practice areas, but they do a lot in terms of sports law and contract law. As I say in this interview, he is my go-to person when it comes to trademarks. In fact, I've got him working on a trademark for me right now, and he does a lot in the sports space in that respect. He also founded the Sports Agent blog. I believe he founded that when he was in law school, if I remember that story correctly. I think so. He founded that in 2005. He was also a contributor at Forbes in the sports money section, and so we overlap during much of our time there together. He's been a sports business contributor at Inc. He goes on TV. He's on the radio. He writes books. I mean, he is one of the most well-known experts, I would say, in the sports law space, somebody that I really respect and enjoy being on panels with, and I'm grateful that he decided to join us here on the Business of College Sports podcast. So without further ado, I give you my interview with Darren Heitner. Welcome to the Business of College Sports podcast, Darren. It's so good to have you here. You and I have a long history of being on panels together and running into each other over and over in this college sports media space, but this is your first time on the podcast. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. And I don't think you can leave out the fact that we're both very proud Gators.
We are. And, you know, it's crazy because people ask me all the time if we went to law school together. And we both went to UF, but I think I was enough ahead of you that either we weren't there at the same time or we only overlapped 1 year. So we did not know each other when we were at UF, but we have been on, I bet if I had to guess, I bet we've probably been on 10 panels across the country together.
And it feels like forever with coronavirus, interfering over the past year. So I'm sure we'll start seeing each other again soon, hopefully.
I know I'm ready to get back on the travel circuit again. I've been traveling for some of my travel writing already, but it was really strange for me this year because for the last 10 years, I have spoken on college campuses, in law schools, in sports management programs, journalism programs, athletic departments, and I did not speak in person on a campus at all last school year. And that's a first for me in the last 10 years. And I know you do a ton of that too. It was odd for me. I miss college campuses. I want to go back.
I miss the traveling for pleasure. I don't necessarily miss the traveling for business. I can tell you, I hope that some of the takeaways from coronavirus include doing like hearings and trials and depositions more through Zoom as opposed to in person to the best extent possible.
Yeah, I agree. It's great that so many more people have gotten sort of accustomed to it. I live in a small town and a lot of older people here who weren't real savvy with Zoom. And so a lot of the like boards and committees I'm on here and even stuff with like the city council and the planning board and all that went on to Zoom. And it was actually great because I don't have time to run down and go to all the meetings in person, but I could put it on Zoom and sort of be multitasking and doing other things. So I'm with you. I hope they keep that kind of stuff now that everybody's figured out how to do it.
We shall see.
Yes. Okay. Well, I wanted to have you on to talk about name, image, and likeness because you and I have both done a lot in this space. And I mean, I remember us talking on panels years ago about what this might look like and if we were ever going to get to a place where players were being paid. And, you know, this is a subject that's come up, I know, over and over again in the 10 years that I've been in sports media. And now I feel like, I mean, the countdown is on. July 1st is not that far away. And we know that we've already got a number of states. I'm mentally counting in my head because we just added Maryland yesterday. So in terms of states that are going into effect July 1st, if my list is correct, I've got Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, New Mexico, Tennessee, and Maryland. Does that sound roughly right to you?
So I have 5 states July 1. I have Tennessee as January of next year, and I believe Maryland is 2023.
So I just changed Tennessee this morning because apparently in the like 11th hour right before the governor signed, they changed it to July 1st. And I saw it in enough places and sort of backed it up that I believe they have actually moved theirs to July 1. I'm guessing that's a SEC state kind of thing. I think, you know, once Florida was on the board for July 1st and you were really involved with the legislation, we both live in Florida and you were really involved in that legislation. It really seems like, you know, a lot of states have pushed for that July 1st start date, but especially SEC states.
Yeah, there was someone on Twitter, I think a week ago, who published that Tennessee's effective date was July 1 of this year. Ended up tagging a bunch of journalists and lawyers and so on and so forth who have been paying very close attention to NIL and then actually retracted. So I wonder if that's where the confusion is arising from or if it is actually true. So I'd love to hear back from you after this as to whether or not Tennessee is July 1 of this year or January 1 of next year. But certainly, this has been very much an SEC priority. If you look at the 5 states, 4 of them, excluding obviously New Mexico, are the home of SEC schools. You have University of Florida, University of Alabama. You have Ole Miss, Mississippi State, University of Georgia, obviously. And then, as you mentioned, Tennessee, which either is July 1 of this year or January 1 of next year, Arkansas, which has a law, but that's effective January 1 of next year, Missouri, that's looking at legislation. I believe that's on their governor's desk, Louisiana, that soon will likely be passing legislation to be signed by its governor that may in fact have a July 1 or close thereto effective date. And it's so interesting. I mean, everyone says things are different with the SEC speed, so on and so forth. It's really playing out off the field in the political spectrum as well. And I just wonder what's going on in the other states that host Pac-12 or Big 10 or Big 12 schools. It's like, why is the priority and emphasis not there? And Look, there are other states outside of those hosting SEC schools that have passed legislation, but with effective dates beyond 2021. You mentioned Maryland in the intro. I think that's a 2023. California was the very first state to pass legislation on this subject with an effective date of 2023. Colorado followed California, also 2023. And it's somewhat mind-boggling. I understand California being a first mover, but then after we in Florida decided to push the envelope with July 1 of this year, I'm somewhat surprised that outside of the SEC states and New Mexico, which is this weird outlier, that we haven't seen more states follow suit or even amend their effective dates to coincide with what we're doing here in the Sunshine State.
Yeah, and I'm actually looking at the Maryland bill right now because I read on a website this morning, and it was I can't remember if I was on Sportico or Sports Illustrated or who I was on, and it said that Maryland would be July 1st. So I actually had the bill pulled up here and I was just scanning through it. And now I see why it's so confusing, because if you get to the very end of this like 13-page act, there is a paragraph that says that part of it goes into effect July 1st, 2023, and then another part of it goes into effect 2021. And then when you start backtracking to see which part is which, there are so many strikethroughs and so much revision that happened to this bill in the 11th hour. I can see now why it's so confusing. So by the time I record the intro and we get this public, I will clarify in the intro about Tennessee and Maryland start dates. But I actually think that's an interesting thing to discuss, because we both live here in Florida, and there was all that drama here in Florida. It hasn't even been quite a month ago yet about backing the date up a year. And it looked like that was going to happen and it was going to move to 2022. And then within 48 hours, it was back to being July 1st, 2021. And you bring up a good point of, you know, even states that have enacted more recently and know how many states are going into effect July 1st have still chosen dates in 2022 and 2023. Do you have any insight or any guesses as to why they would have those later start dates?
I don't. I'd be speculating, but it's probably because there is a fear of interfering with the NCAA. We obviously, again, pushed the envelope here in the state of Florida when we decided to have a July 1, 2021 effective date. And you bring up what happened at the very tail end of this year's legislative session. At the end of April, there was an amendment that was snuck into an completely unrelated bill concerning charter schools that had, for that time, once that bill was passed, changed the effective date from July 1 of this year to July 1, 2022. And again, I say it was snuck in there. No one was prepared for it. It was a rogue individual, you could say, who decided that this was something necessary. And within 48 hours, and in fact, on the very last day of the legislative session, there was an effort that accomplished bringing back the effective date to July 1, 2021 by reinserting that date into separate legislation. What I think is really interesting that not a lot of people know is that the state of Florida was actually initially even more aggressive than it ended up being with this July 1, 2021 effective date. Chip LaMarca, the original sponsor of the legislation who represents my district, initially had a July 1, 2020 effective date in his legislation. Wow. And in fact, that went through the respective committees in the Florida House and went to the Florida Senate, where at that point in time, senators were concerned with such an early effective date. Remember, this was March, April of last year, and decided, let's kick it out a year. So then there was the consideration of kicking it out another year this year. And fortunately, that did not happen, because Florida could have gone from being the leader in the space to now being behind others who followed our footsteps, like Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, et cetera.
Yeah, and the reasoning I saw that this rogue individual wanted to move it was some sort of concern that the NCAA would punish Florida student athletes who started taking advantage of the right to profit from their name, image, and likeness. But just the week before that, Emmert had met with, I think it was five basketball student athletes. And one of those student athletes had reported in the press that they specifically asked Emmert about that. And he had said they would not punish student athletes in states that had laws going into effect in July. So it was like a quick Google search, and you could have, clearly seen at least what this basketball student athlete was saying Emmert's stance on it was, and what the NCAA was or wasn't going to do. So I was kind of surprised, but I don't know what other reason he would have for trying to change that date at the last minute and sticking it in that charter school bill. I saw this morning that Emmert has now come out and said that Oregon's proposed legislation is problematic, and that if they pass their legislation, the NCAA would likely ban Oregon student athletes. And that's because there's a provision in there that says that there are to be royalty payments to each student athlete who is a current member of the team from the school's merchandise and apparel deal. So like the school's right. Nike deal, the student athletes would get royalty payments from that. That certainly looks a little more like pay to play than the NIL laws we've seen in other states.
That's right. And that makes complete sense. You know, going back to the end of Florida's legislative session, we're still really trying to figure out, and I'm sure there's a really good story to be told, as to what the real justification was behind Senator Travis Hudson, who initially proposed the amendment to push back the effective date. Obviously, as you mentioned, his rhetoric was that he was concerned that the NCAA could take punitive action against the athletes and schools in the state of Florida. But as you also astutely mentioned, Mark Emmert had met with some student athletes earlier in the month and made it very clear, based on the reporting that both of us had read, that there would not be any punitive action taken. And what's interesting is, I suppose, within the 48 hours between when Senator Travis Hudson initially proposed this amendment to push back the date and then actually sponsored another amendment to bring it back, he apparently received the necessary assurances from the NCAA and Mark Emmert. And they also included some other type of amendment that seems to say schools would have to leave the NCAA if the NCAA reversed that position at some point in time in the future. As for Oregon, it doesn't surprise me whatsoever that the NCAA would take a very different stance if legislation goes beyond strictly publicity rights, that being name, image, and likeness. And to the extent that Oregon is considering student athletes and the universities being in some sort of contractual relationship or relationship where compensation is being derived from the universities, that's the big fear for the NCAA. I mean, number one, something that you've written about extensively, there's potentially Title IX concerns unless there is an equal amount of payment to all athletes, gender neutral, revenue and non-revenue sports. And then there's the separate concern that I know the NCAA has, which is that they want to avoid, under any circumstance, they want to avoid having athletes being construed as employees. And while receiving royalties would not necessarily make them W-2 employees, it just brings them a bit closer to that status. So it doesn't surprise me whatsoever. I had not seen that the NCAA came out with an official position on Oregon's proposal, but it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, that was just, I literally just read it right before we started recording. If you guys are listening to this on the day it comes out, we're only recording about 5 days before this is going to go live. And as I was scanning NIL headlines this morning, I saw that one about Oregon. And the other one I saw that I wanted to talk about is that last night, we're recording this Thursday, May 20th. So last night, the NCAA did put an update on its own website saying that they believe the council is going to act on the legislative proposal for name, image, and likeness during its meetings June 22nd and 23rd. And there had been, there's been a lot of discussion lately about whether or not they were going to try to get something passed, before or pretty close to July 1st. And now it sounds a little more promising that maybe they are going to get something done by July 1st. But, in your your opinion, how important is it that they do something before the school year begins and as all these July start dates go into effect? And how does that impact things anyway, since you've got state laws that are going to likely look a little different than what the NCAA is going to pass?
Well, we're recording this well before it's going to be released. And if anyone who's listening knows anything about name, image, and likeness in the recent past, this is a very fast moving area of the sports industry. And so things are changing on a daily basis, if not on an hourly basis. And so I had actually heard about some things that were said during that Division I council meeting on May 19th. And I assume that this information will become public between now and when this podcast is released. But as of now, and while we're recording, it has not yet gotten out there. My understanding is that while the Division I council may seem destined to do something, number one, it has not done anything yet. And its next meeting is mere days prior to July 1, which is when five states as of now are to be effective with their name, image, and likeness laws. Now, there's nothing that necessarily prevents the D1 council from calling a special meeting, which could happen. However, from what I'm hearing, there's not a lot of optimism, because from what I hear, now the council is bogged down by what they are calling significant legal issues, that all of a sudden they're very concerned about potential for lawsuits to be filed from former college athletes who were not afforded name, image, and likeness rights while they were in school. And the NCAA is apparently still concerned about a pending Supreme Court case of NCAA v. Alston, which I'm sure, you know, I know that you are very familiar with, and I'm sure many of your listeners are, really has nothing to do with name, image, and likeness at its core. There's the potential for the Supreme Court to weigh in on it, although I think that's rather unlikely. But that's more of an antitrust issue with regard to capping educational related benefits to athletes. But apparently it's still a major concern for the NCAA and a big reason why it hasn't done anything on name, image, and likeness. And so it's hard for me to speculate as to what the NCAA will do, if anything. And this really is the reason why, at least in the recent past, the NCAA has been so proactive, begging Congress on the national level to do something. Mark Emmert was just in DC for many days lobbying members of Congress. And the problem is there's just not enough time right now to figure out how to combine a lot of these bills that have thus far been introduced and come up with something that is that will be supported by both major parties. So I don't know. I suppose the NCAA will have to do something if it's pressed, because I don't see a situation where only five or six or seven states have these rights come July 1. I just don't know what it will look like. And I don't know how the NCAA will be able to avoid exposure, especially because its rules will have to be different than those in the states.
You had to bet on it. Do you think we have something from Congress before the school year starts?
No. And I say that as an educated guess. In speaking with some people on Capitol Hill this week, they say it's less than a 50% chance. And, you know, that was two, 3 days ago, I guess a week ago, based on when this podcast is going live. So that could obviously change, but less than 50% chance leads me to believe that it's unlikely. However, there is optimism that something gets done in the fall. It is a quote unquote priority. However, it's sort of just becoming a priority. And I think that's because one state, Florida, having a July 1 effective date doesn't really get on the radar of Congress, but five states, six, seven does.
Right.
And so here we are in where I think now they're finally paying attention to it on Capitol Hill. And so I would expect something in the fall. It's unlikely that we have an actual law signed by President Biden prior to July 1.
Do you think that it's important that we have something from the NCAA for, you know, the beginning of this school year? Or do you think it's totally fine that they just wait and see what Congress does?
It depends on whose perspective you're asking for. Me personally, I think it's fine for the NCAA to do nothing at this point. Because again, I envision that Congress will take action this fall. So it will be soon behind many of these states initially having their laws go effective. One state we haven't even mentioned thus far is Texas, obviously a huge state when it comes to college athletics. And there's a bill in Texas that will likely be passed and signed into law with an effective date of September 1, 2021. So only a couple months past some of the others. And I think, you know, again, that's just going to add more and more pressure. And my belief is that Congress will do something. If there's a small gap between July 1 and when that happens, I don't think that it's compelling for the NCAA to do something. But then again, for you, me, or anyone to try to speculate as to what the NCAA will or will not do is really a futile effort. I mean, you never know what the NCAA will or won't do. I've tried to guess time and time again on a number of issues, and they surprise me every single time.
Yeah, I would never bet on the NCAA on anything, because every time I think I know exactly what they're going to do, whether it's name, image, and likeness or something else, I end up being terribly wrong. So I also try not to prognosticate on what the NCAA might or might not do, because they have a history of surprising me. Yeah. Okay. If you, I think you were not a student athlete, right?
I was not.
I was not either. But let's pretend that we were. Yeah, and that we had some exceptional athletic ability that I did not have, at least. If you were a student athlete, would it matter to you at this point, with just state laws in place, how much would that weigh into your decision when you were looking at, you know, different programs? Would you base a decision, at least in part, on whether or not you were going to be able to monetize your name, image, and likeness?
You know, sitting here today at the end of May, I don't know that it would play that big of a role because I think more likely than not, if I've done the diligence, I would believe that these are rights that will be afforded to me next year. So if I'm not enrolling at the beginning of this year, I don't know that it plays such a significant role in my decision-making process. However, I may be influenced by the programs that these schools are rolling out and the resources that they're appropriating towards assisting me with developing my brand, and obviously not procuring opportunities, but helping with education and so on and so forth. Yeah. So that could still play a major role. But I do think that it absolutely has played a role over the past year with many recruits who may have been considering different schools and prioritize those in states where they knew that there would be rights come July 1. And again, in particular, schools in the state of Florida, because for quite some time, it was only Florida that could assure athletes that these rights would be made available to them as of July 1 this year. I think that gave an incredible advantage over the past year to many coaches in many athletic departments across the state.
I don't know how much you have talked to coaches or have any knowledge of this, but I had a former coach on the podcast a while back, and the picture he painted was that football coaches are frustrated by NIL. It's going to be one more thing that they have to manage, one more thing that maybe their guys are either fighting with each other over, or they're fighting with coaches over playing time, or, you know, that it's like one more problem and one more thing for them to sort of learn more about. A lot of them are not super savvy when it comes to things like social media marketing. And so, you know, he put forth that he thought a lot of older college football coaches might decide to retire or go into the NFL to not have to deal with this. Do you think that's genuine? Because I feel like the coaches I see talking in the media and on Twitter are super excited for this, particularly the ones in Florida. I've seen comment over and over about how important they think this is for the young men that they work with. So just curious what kind of things you've heard from coaches or how you think they're feeling about this.
One of the most incredible moments over the past 2 years in name, image, and likeness actually occurred at the end of the Florida legislative session this year, in that 48-hour period between when there was an amendment to push back the effective date to July 1, 2022, and then ultimately to bring it back to July 1 of this year. And it was incredible because you saw Coach Norville at FSU Coach Mullen at UF, Coach Diaz at University of Miami, Coach Malzahn at UCF, all come out and speak publicly and tweet and say to Governor DeSantis, to the Florida legislature, this is not acceptable. We have athletes who are expecting these rights. Don't push it back. You had Blake James at University of Miami, the athletic director, do the same. And I think that just goes to show you where, sure, there may have been coaches that were concerned about what this could do 2 years, 1 year ago. But as we sit here today, at least in the state of Florida, where we saw such unified vocal support, these coaches are 100% for it. I mean, look at UCF. They had their spring game and put Twitter handles of all the players on the backs of their uniforms. This is exciting for them. And I don't think that there is much of a concern, especially after these coaches have been educated. They shouldn't have any concern. Perhaps compliance officers at the universities and athletic directors should be concerned to ensure that they truly and fully understand the state law, that they are positioning themselves for success. They understand the process of reviewing contracts and accepting them and have their partnerships with third parties properly in place. I mean, that's, if anyone should be concerned, it's them. It should not be the coaches. I think the coaches should be extremely excited about it. And I believe that their outpouring of support just a few weeks ago is evidence of that.
So you brought up UCF spring game and having the Twitter handles for the players, and that reminded me of something I'm working on. And I think by the time this goes live, I will have already published it over on Forbes. So I'll go ahead and talk about it. I just don't want anybody to steal my idea, but no, and I'm not a Title IX expert. I don't think you consider yourself a Title IX expert either, but I know enough to get by most days. And I noticed, I think it was about a week ago, there was a story that started floating around about how Notre Dame had taken out digital billboards where it was featuring some of its football players and was putting their, I think it was their Twitter handles that were up on those billboards as well. And my little Title IX brain, the first thing I thought of was, well, are you doing this for other sports? Are you going to take out billboards for female student athletes and stick their right. Twitter handles on there? Because no one's ever really been challenged under that piece of Title IX, the sort of marketing and promotion piece. And I wrote about this a year ago, and I talked to several Title IX experts about how this was going to change with NIL coming. And they were all very concerned that athletic departments are going to have to start being more careful about how they are promoting some of their sports and how they're promoting individual athletes, because now these student athletes are going to have opportunities to monetize. And if they're getting additional marketing and promotion from the athletic department, you know, there's an argument that that gives them a leg up with their own individual marketing. And so I've been working on this story where I've pulled in a couple of Title IX experts to weigh in, and they've all agreed that if Notre Dame or anyone else is going to spend money to put up billboards and have individual student athletes' Twitter handles up there like that, you better be doing the same thing for some of your female student athletes. So I'm just curious, I don't know how much you've thought about it or talked about what this looks like in terms of how athletic departments are maybe going to have to start adjusting marketing and promotion for different sports.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, violations of Title IX, or really violations of any law, are oftentimes not made a concern when the violations are what you could, I guess, classify as de minimis, right? So there are violations of statutes nonstop throughout every state on a daily basis. It's just a matter of whether or not there's action taken on them. And I think in the specific example you provided, and probably if there are similar actions taken by other universities or Notre Dame itself, it's unlikely to rise to the level of a concern unless perhaps there's litigation surrounding it. I was much more concerned throughout this entire process with Title IX if in fact there were going to be any, if there was going to be any involvement of the universities with regard to procuring opportunities, helping procure opportunities for the athletes, or having monies flow through the universities and to the athletes. And that's why I've never really been so concerned from a Title IX perspective. But you do bring up a good point. I mean, I suppose technically the example that you provide with regard to Notre Dame could be deemed a violation of Title IX. The question is it a violation that is acted upon and enforced against the university? And will that be true for any other university? And I would guess probably not. Again, I think that there are probably many technical violations of Title IX across the country every year that are not necessarily acceptable, but they happen and there's no punitive action taken because of it. And I would think the same thing is true here, but it should be a learning opportunity for Notre Dame and other schools, and that you need to be treating athletes across the genders fairly and equitably. Believe me, something we've looked at from day one is this is not just name, image, and likeness. These are not only going to be opportunities for male athletes. There's already examples of females in NAIA, which have had these rights, taking advantage of them and making considerable amounts of money, paying off debt, saving for to buy homes. So I would hope that universities are understanding of that and do not only promote the male athletes, but also the female athletes. But they should be careful. They absolutely should be cautious.
Yeah. And I think 5 years ago, I probably would have said, sure, maybe there's a Title IX issue there, but probably no one's going to highlight it and certainly not bring any sort of case or anything. However, over the past year, particularly with what we've seen around, comparing the men's and the women's basketball tournaments, and then that went into looking at, I think I saw a couple articles about volleyball and about baseball versus softball. And, I think everyone's looking at it more with a more critical eye now. And we've even seen the women's national soccer team, bring up a marketing and promotion claim. And so I think that the level of awareness is sort of raised, and, whether anyone is going to feel strongly enough about it and feel like there was enough of a violation to actually bring something remains to be seen. But I do think that if I worked in an athletic department, I would just maybe be a little more aware of it and, trying to do as much as I could to make that marketing and promotion equal. One former AD I talked to said that they've always justified spending more money on, billboards or Facebook ads or whatever it is for sports like football and men's basketball and baseball, because those are sports that tend to produce a fair amount of revenue for the athletic department versus even some other male sports, not to mention some of the female sports. And that the justification is, well, we should spend money to market sports that make us money, which, you and I both own our own businesses. As a business owner, totally get it. But I do feel like everything's being looked at a little more critically in the Title IX space now. And I have reached out to Notre Dame for comment and have been having some back and forth with them and hope to have something. And that's actually why I've held off and haven't published the piece yet. I did not want to go on the attack without talking to them and finding out what are their plans. Maybe they have these digital billboards for the entire next year and they're going to rotate a number of sports through them. I wanted to make sure I understood what they were doing. And I don't have the full story as we're recording this, but I'm hoping to have it by the time that I post, because I do think it's something that athletic departments are going to have to give a little more thought as we move into this NIL era and student athletes have these opportunities and want the exposure from their athletic department. They want the athletic department to be sharing about them on social media and putting them on billboards and, getting them in their games and getting, FaceTime and TV time. And, I just think everything is going to be looked at a little differently once this all begins.
Yeah, I mean, look, I know for certain that at least state by state, there will be a lot of attention paid to what the universities are doing, what the third party partners are doing, what the athletes are doing, what the agents are doing. I can't necessarily speak to the federal government and what it may be looking at specifically. As far as the federal proposals are concerned, it seems like the FTC will be overseeing any federal law with regard to name, image, and likeness, which I think is interesting in itself, since the FTC has been governing the athlete agent industry for about 20 years and has never once taken action against a single athlete agent, despite the fact that many states have. But this is all very interesting. It's fluid. I do wonder also, you know, to the extent that Title IX will play a role. I have sort of been on the other side of the spectrum as you with regard to belief as to the role that Title IX plays generally with name, image, and likeness, but I certainly see its potential application in the example that you provided, assuming that Notre Dame does not have some larger plan to also promote other athletes.
Yeah. And you and I don't always agree on things, but you're one of my favorite people to talk to about college sports. We've been on plenty of panels where we have not agreed on something and can have a very respectful conversation about it. And so I always appreciate being able to debate these things with you and being able to do it in a way that has always been respectful. And so you're somebody I've always enjoyed being on panels with. You're also my resident trademark expert. So you are always the person I go to when I'm writing stories that involve trademark that I don't fully understand. And you're also the person I refer everyone who asks me about who can help me with my trademark. So
I'm happy to be of service.
Yes. Yeah, so I can't let you go without asking you what you think this is going to look like when things open up on July 1st. Just generally in terms of how quickly do you think we're going to start seeing some sort of deals, whether that is social media marketing or it's in some other realm? And do you think you're going to have some college athletes who are looking to trademark, you know, nicknames or some of their catchphrases and that kind of thing?
So to answer the first question, yeah, I think that we will start to hear about deals as of the first day, that being July 1. Now, remember, any deal needs to first be filtered by the university before it becomes effective in itself. But I think you're going to see a lot of brands. In fact, I know many brands are already coming up with their own NIL strategies, perhaps hiring internally and even partnering with groups externally to come up with strategies and be able to hopefully work with athletes on day one for many reasons, perhaps one, to get exclusivity over their competitors, but two, also to gain quite a bit of press, which I expect they will receive for being first movers in the space. So I think that we'll start to see it day one, but obviously the majority of the deals will take some time to actually be brokered. I think a lot of these athletes will have agents who will try to procure opportunities, negotiate them. And so I don't expect, you know, thousands of deals day one. I expect a few, and really throughout the fall and the spring to see many more. With regard to athletes, yeah, I think that they are really going to be paying attention to building their brands and protecting their brands. I've actually worked with some athletes in filing what are called intent to use applications with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office before they turn pro, which is perfectly fine. Intent to use means they're not yet using the brand in commerce, but at least they're getting the application process started. The unique thing now is that they'll be able to file what are called 1A, actual use applications, because if they're actually using a brand, let's say a nickname, a slogan, or the like in commerce, now we don't have to file intent to use anymore, because perhaps the NCAA will not prohibit it, but if they're in a state that has an NIL law that's effective, obviously they have permission to use their name, image, and likeness in commerce. So I do expect athletes to be paying more attention to their intellectual property, how they can protect it, and also how they can enforce, well, perhaps license it to others, and then enforce against infringement or dilution efforts by third parties. And this is a conversation I'm already having, actually, with athletic departments, third-party service providers, and the like.
And that kind of leads me into a question I was going to ask you, which is, if athletic administrators who are listening to this, or maybe other people who are going to work in some capacity with student athletes, are listening to this and just don't know a lot about trademarks and trademark law, what is your advice in terms of when someone needs a trademark? If someone's sort of thinking about it, what are kind of the key factors you think someone should consider in deciding whether or not to pursue that? Because it's not cheap, especially for a student athlete, right, who maybe isn't making a lot of money yet on their name, image, and likeness. So what are those factors you would tell people to consider?
Yeah, I think it boils down to whether you have created or intend to create a brand and a legit business. Intellectual property is a form of property. So you can think of it similar to how you may think of buying land, which is real property. These are, so you can actually own something prevent others from using it, make money off of it. One of the big benefits of having a registration is being able to sue an infringer in federal court and receive statutory damages and prevent others through by way of injunction from using something that may be likely to be confused with consumers. So I think it all depends on whether you've created a brand that you truly want to build a business around. And if the answer is yes, then it's most likely something that you should at least consider trademarking.
Fantastic. Thank you for all the great advice and just sort of chatting this through. I always enjoy talking with you and always learn something new. So appreciate you coming on the Business of College Sports podcast. Tell people where they can find you if they want to follow you on social media, or maybe they do want to reach out to you about a trademark or another matter. Let everybody know where they can find you, and I will put it all down in the show notes.
Sure. So it's just my name at Darren Heitner, DarrenHeitner. You can find me on Twitter, Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn, just obviously with my name. And then my law firm is Heitner Legal, and that's at HEITNERlegal.com.
Awesome. Thank you for joining us, Darren. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks again to my friend Darren Heitner for joining us here on the Business of College Sports podcast. I will link up to his website and social media down in the show notes in case you want to learn more or get in touch with him. The NIL stuff, I think, is going to continue to be fast and furious, at least from now until that July 1st start date. And even then, I think throughout this first school year with NIL legislation in place in whatever format it finally ends up being in place is going to be a little bit like the Wild Wild West. So we'll definitely revisit this more. If you've got specific questions about NIL, feel free to shoot me an email, send me a direct message on Twitter at SportsBizMiss. We'll definitely circle back and talk about this more. Thank you for joining me another week here on the Business College Sports podcast. I am very thankful for all of you who take time to listen to the podcast. Love hearing from you and hope that you have a fabulous week until I am back with you again next week.